I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. We're continuing our 30 issues in 30 days election coverage with a focus on health care. It has been such a contentious issue, from death panels to President Obama's health care overhaul being tried by the Supreme Court, to being a political football getting kicked around the campaign trail. We no longer hear so much about death panels, but we're hearing a lot about Obamacare, Romney Care, and Medicare. Joining me to sort out what's at stake come Election Day and to talk us through what health care would look like in a Romney administration or in Obama's second term is someone who knows a lot about this, Trudy Lieberman. Trudy Lieberman is a contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review, where she covers health care and how the media covers health care. Trudy Lieberman, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. So how does a voter make sense of all this?
First of all, it's very difficult. And what we've been trying to do at CJR.org is kind of sort all this out for the media and the public as well. But I will begin first by talking about Obamacare and then move into Medicare, which there are vast differences between the president and Mr. Romney. So essentially, we have a choice now with health care. The Obama health reform law is the law of the land. The Supreme Court has told us that. And it will go forward. It is going forward right now. Some provisions have already been implemented, such as allowing young adults to remain on their parents' policies until they're age 26. So that is a provision that will probably stay. If Obama is elected, the whole health reform law will take effect most of it will be effective in 2014. And in 2014 is the time when the individual mandate will take effect. And that means everyone in the country, with a few exceptions, will have to be carrying health insurance of one kind or another. Either they get it from a government program like Medicare or Medicaid, or they, an employer plan, or they go into the private market through these so-called insurance exchanges, like the Connector in Massachusetts, and buy an individual policy. So if they don't do that, there will be penalties. There are very modest penalties for some people to have this coverage. So essentially, the choice they will have in these exchanges, and I think it's important to know this was not covered very well during the run-up to reform, that people will essentially have four different plans to choose from: bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And you can imagine that the bronze policy will cover less than the one at the top, which is the platinum policy. And that policy is designed to cover 60% of someone's cost, and the one at the top, a platinum policy, will cover about 90% with 20 and 70% in between. So people will have to pay some money out of pocket if the subsidy they get is not sufficient from the government to buy what they want. That is the nub of the health reform law. The other part of the health reform law expands Medicaid, and the law anticipated an increase of about 17 million people joining the ranks of Medicaid after health reform is implemented. It was a very large Medicaid expansion that would increase eligibility for this program. And I want to step back for a minute and define it. Medicaid pays for health care for people with low incomes, and it is a means-tested program, meaning that people who qualify have to pass an asset test and an income test. Unlike Medicare, this is really important to remember, Medicare is not really a means-tested program at the moment. It is an entitlement that people are eligible for at age 65 or if they become disabled, because they have paid into the system during their working lives. It's really important to understand that. So going back to Obamacare, you have a law that will take effect in 2014, and most of the provisions will be implemented at that time. If Romney is elected, he has promised to repeal the law on the second day he's in the White House, or the first day, and he said he would do that through an executive order.
And replace.
It's not quite sure right now what he means by that. He has said that what worked in Massachusetts doesn't necessarily work for the rest of the country, and so that kind of gets him off the hook about what he supported in the Bay State. However, he's also saying that, well, there are some provisions I kind of like. So we really don't know what he would keep and what he wouldn't like. Now, his replacement plan is really quite different. I guess you can consider, if you're comparing it to the Affordable Care Act, which is the official name for Obamacare, that it's fairly minimal. And he talks a lot about generally tried and true, I guess you call them, or old line Republican nostrums for improving the healthcare system. One of them is malpractice reform. Another one is to allow insurance companies to cross state lines, injecting some measure of competition in the insurance market. And if insurance policies, if companies have to compete more, somehow the price will come down and therefore healthcare costs will come down. So those are two essential things that he's talked about. And I think it's important to remember a couple things that if you, the Affordable Care Act does allow some crossing of state lines, I believe, in the out years of the implementation of the act. But I think one concern that a lot of people have had by that is that if insurance companies have to pick and choose what state they want to do business in, they're going to do business in those that have the fewest regulations. The states regulate insurance companies, not the federal government. And so we've already seen some evidence of this in other states where companies have kind of shopped around to find the states where they want to do business because they'll have the fewest number of restrictions on what they can do. So that is certainly something to watch. Many states have had consumer protections placed in the books, so that at least offers some protection for consumers from out-of-state insurers. And we're not sure what would happen to those in a Romney healthcare reform.
And so, Trudy, let me pause you there because I feel you heading toward Medicare, and I want to just go and underscore a couple things before we move toward that very, very stark difference. And we should emphasize again that this is one of the issues, healthcare, about which both candidates agree that there are stark differences between their vision for how healthcare should be implemented in the country and what it means and what it should look like. So both of them agree, and that's very clear. I want to go back and just emphasize this Kaiser Family Foundation poll, which just came out this week, yesterday, as a matter of fact, saying 53% of people right now believe that President Obama's handling of health care is okay. That's versus 33% who say no. And ask this question of you, because there was a lot of anger. There still is a lot of anger. I don't want to suggest it's gone, but there certainly was more visible anger and opposition by the public, not just about by politicians during the 2010 election campaign, so much so that it was a driver in getting a number of people who identified as Tea Partiers saying, we got to get rid of this, elect me, and I will work toward getting rid of President Obama's health care plan in office. And that seems to have shifted. What are we to make of that, at least to some degree?
Well, I think the public is still fairly split on the Affordable Care Act. I think a lot of people really don't know what's in it, and they have been, their opinions have been swayed by this TV show or this public affairs show or whatever. And I think I've done tons of man on the street interviews over the last few years, and we publish those online. And every time I ask this question, I find that people really don't understand what's in it. And I think it's important to know that a lot of people aren't even going to be affected by it because 150 million people or so have insurance from their employers. And that's not going to change very much. What those people will see, and this really hasn't been addressed, is that the cost of the premiums are going to continue to go up and the cost sharing is going to increase as well. And what we're going to see is people paying higher and higher deductibles, and I'm sure many of your listeners can relate to that, higher and higher deductibles, and instead of a simple copayment that we all understand, like $25 or $40, insurance companies are going to be using co-insurance, which is much different and results in a lot more money that people have to pay, and that is a percentage of the bill, a medical bill, that they have to pay themselves. So I think that the anger in some ways has shifted to Medicare, mm-hmm. where there are very stark differences. And Republicans used Medicare very successfully in the 2010 elections. And they used it saying that Obama had taken $500 billion out of Medicare and used it to subsidize the uninsured. And then they ran candidates who said that they didn't like that, and that resonated a lot with the public.
Number we keep hearing is $716 billion.
Yeah, so. The difference is the following. It was about 500 2 years ago. The difference now is the CBO has sort of looked at the projections again and kind of revised their numbers. So the number right now is about $716 billion.
And that's the Congressional Budget Office, just so we know.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's a very reliable number. But I think it's fair to look at what exactly that means. And I think unlike 2010, where the press and others were not really examining the claims that were being made for the then $500 billion, the press is doing a little better job now at examining what that really means. And so it means the following, that in the Affordable Care Act, the hospitals and other providers agreed to take lower reimbursements from Medicare, in order to support they agreed to that in return for not fighting against the Affordable Care Act as it was going through Congress. And in return for the lower reimbursements that the hospitals will get, they were hoping that the individual mandate would bring more customers who could pay, or more patients, I should say, to the door who could pay because now they have insurance. So that was sort of the quid pro quo. The other chunk that was taken out were cuts to the Medicare Advantage plans. And these are an alternative way for people on Medicare to get benefits that cover the gaps in Medicare. So you can essentially either get a Medicare Advantage plan and have the insurance company pay your Medicare benefits, or you can go to the traditional Medicare supplement policies, which is what most beneficiaries still do, and those policies cover the gaps in Medicare. So there was a cut in reimbursements to those plans because they were overpaid from the beginning. And most policymakers, and Obama said this right from the beginning when he was campaigning, that he saw no reason to overpay insurance companies and that he would do something about it. And indeed, the Affordable Care Act does do something about it. There were no benefit cuts, basic benefit cuts, to Parts A or B in Medicare, which are the hospital coverage and doctor coverage and hospital outpatient lab tests and so forth. And I think it's important for people to remember that, although I must say I've been seeing some buzz around in some of the areas where when you point that out, they're saying, oh, yes, but the doctors are not going to take Medicare patients now, or the hospitals won't treat them because they're going to get paid less. Well, we still haven't figured out the doctor, how we're going to pay the doctors, and we've been trying to do that since 1997. And every time Medicare tries to cut their fees, they always get a reprieve. So we have that going on. But we also have the point that we don't know to what extent doctors are not going to take Medicare patients. We hear anecdotally, and certainly here in New York City we do, that doctors are not going to take them, and they're certainly not going to take someone new who's on Medicare. That seems to be happening in a few places, but a lot of experts believe that it's probably not in a lot of doctors' best interest not to take Medicare patients because we're really talking about an older population that has health problems. So I think at this point, we don't know whether that will happen. So I think it's also important to understand that if Romney does succeed in repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, people on Medicare will see an increase in what they're going to pay for their Medicare services, because implicit in those hospitals cutting or agreeing to lower reimbursements, that gets factored into what those various premiums are. And so people will see an increase in those Part A and Part B premiums.
If I can interrupt you, one of the things that has become part of this whole political discussion out on the campaign trail is that $716 billion cut, which you have just explained where it comes down from, where it comes from, what it's doing, all of that, which, you know, President Obama's plan does, but also Congressman Ryan's plan is the exact same amount of money is cut from his plan as well. So in terms of what he would do as well or what they would do, because we can assume that some part of his plan would be adopted by Mitt Romney, it's the same piece of money coming in from the same place. So that should be made clear.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. What has happened is that in Romney, and he's chairman of the House Budget Committee, and a position to opine on these things and write them into legislation, he would do exactly the same thing because government waste is government waste. And I think the difference is people, you know, don't understand that, but that irony is being promoted a little bit in the press now. But I think that people ought to understand that Ryan's version and Mitt Romney's version of what should happen to Medicare is different from Obama's. Obama does not support a voucher system, and Romney and Ryan do. And under that kind of a proposal, people would be given a set amount of money, a voucher or premium support, whatever you want to call it, to go into the private market and buy whatever plan suits them. And if the voucher is not sufficient to buy a comprehensive plan, then they're going to have to dig into their own pocketbook or wallet to pay the rest. And it will essentially break up the social insurance nature of Medicare. Medicare will be gradually converted to a private insurance system the way we, the rest of us have through the private commercial market. Obama has made it very clear that he's not going to do that. I think, though, it's also important to point out that Obama very well may support other changes to Medicare short of a voucher or premium support plan. And these are some things that people don't really know very much about, but probably ought to. One of the things that's being talked about in Congress is to get rid of the three deductibles in the Medicare program, hospital, doctor, drug deductibles, and have a unified deductible. And this would, of course, cap out-of-pocket spending, but it caps it at such a high level that a lot of low- and moderate-income families might be spending the first $6,500 or $7,500 of expenses out-of-pocket, which raises the question of how much can they really afford. That's one of the proposals floating around by Congressman Senator Joe Lieberman from Connecticut.
And Trudy, the same Kaiser Family Foundation poll from yesterday notes that 2/3 of the people 55 to 64 prefer keeping Medicare as it is, and 64% of those who are over 65 do. And so that's kind of a statement right now about where people, what people are feeling somewhat about the voucher program. Just to be, let me give you a metaphor for how I see the voucher program, and tell me if this is right, because Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan have made a very passionate plea about this and said, listen, this gives people choice. They can go with a government program. They can buy insurance from a commercial program, and they can have that choice to do so, as opposed to we keep running up more costs under the current system where everybody gets to just get government insurance and there's no way of doing this. But I was thinking to myself, it reminded me of like going to dinner and everybody has cash and one person has a credit card, and you give the cash to the person with the credit card. And if they are not on top of that to pay off the credit card right away, you got a problem because it's going to cost you more. That's the simplest way I could think about it. And I don't know if that's accurate.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy, Kelly. I think that's a very good way to kind of think about it. It is going to cost people a lot more, and I think that's why you see the results in the Kaiser poll suggesting that people who are on the program and those almost on the program don't want to change because they know how expensive this medical care can be. I do want to address this issue of choice because that is how it's being sold. I mean, that's how Medicare managed care has been sold since the mid-1990s. And it's being sold as you've got to have more choice. And it's really a disguise, I think, for trying to really fundamentally change the system. I have covered Medicare for almost 3 decades now, and I think you cannot argue that there's not a lot of choice in this program. Some people right now in New York City and many other places have more than 100 choices for covering the gaps in Medicare, and that includes traditional Medicare supplement policies, the new Medicare Advantage plans, retiree plans. There's just a lot of choice. And within even the Medicare traditional Medigap plans, there are many choices that people can have, and they've had this for a long, long time. And every Medicare Advantage company is out in the market with several different options for the same coverage. Maybe a little tweak here, a little tweak there, but essentially the same. So my question is, as an old consumer reporter, how are people really going to make those choices? It is really very difficult, and all the online tools in the world are not really going to help them that much. And I think that people in Congress need to realize what a new beneficiary goes through, and one can argue that someone does not need 100 choices to fill the gaps in Medicare.
Well, we've run out of time, Trudy, and we didn't get a chance to get to Medicaid, which I think is important for people to understand in terms of the differences. We're going to link to your reporting, certainly, on our website. And I'd like to know if there's any other plain English source you'd suggest to help people sort through these issues as they get ready to go to the polls.
Well, I really think some of the stuff on the Kaiser Family Foundation website explains Medicare and Medicaid really, really well. So I would suggest that. And again, all of the stuff that we've been doing on CJR.org, I think, really sort of set it out. Over the last 4 or 5 years, I've done 600 or so posts, almost all of it about healthcare. And there's a lot of Medicare stuff on there. We have a whole archive on Medicare that they could link to, and a primer that I did in mid-August. And I think that is a pretty basic thing that really lays out very simply and clearly the different options. And both parties have supported some of these. So I think people need to think about that also as they go to the polls.
Thank you so much. That is good, good counsel for everybody. We've been talking about health care, Obamacare, Romney care, Medicare with health reporter Trudy Lieberman. It's one of our topics we're talking about as part of our ongoing election coverage, 30 issues in 30 days. Trudy Lieberman, thank you so much for bringing clarity to health care.
Thank you very much for having me.
Candid camera on the campaign trail, Vermont messes with Texas. That's the local news that went under the radar. It's my regional week in review. Next, I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio.